Well, welcome everyone. We're glad you joined us for another episode of A Basic Conversation. And as always, I'm sitting across from Father Jim Basic. And we continue season three, and we're looking at theologians that have had a significant impact on the Catholic Church, spirituality, the world, and in some cases to you, Father Basic. So great to be here again.
We've done a lot of these, haven't we, Brad?
It's been fun. Meaningful, fun.
And it's great. I look forward to it.
Me too. And so today we're going to focus on the theologian Karl Barth.
Uh-huh.
So how about if you give us some background information on him? And
yeah, he wouldn't be a familiar name to many people. You spell it B-A-R-T-H, spelled Karl Barth, 20th century figure. Probably the most impressive, important, influential Protestant theologian since Martin Luther and John Calvin. I mean, this is a towering figure in the world of theology. To try to, after World War II and through the 20th century, there was a movement within theology generally that we use the broad term liberal theology. Liberal theology, you know, was big in Germany and worked its way around the globe, was interested in dialogue with the modern world, interested in where you could find connections, which was going on. My mentor, Karl Rahner, would be a great example of a liberal theologian trying to find out how to express the Christian message in the modern world after the French Revolution and the Enlightenment and the development of what we call modernity, the modern world as we still know it today. Now, Karl Barth was he was a pastor. His father was a pastor and a conservative pastor. And Karl Barth studied under the great liberal theologians in Germany. And as time went on, he began to reject that liberal theology. And he did it through publishing a book, a commentary on Paul's epistle to the Romans. Now, that's Paul's longest and most important epistle. Epistle to the Romans, and Karl Barth wrote a commentary on it, and which went after the liberals, you could say it that way, that the liberals had sold out to modernity in many ways. One of the thing was when he wrote a piece, it fell on the theologian of the plague on of the theologians like a bombshell. It was made a big impact, and it was quite a criticism of liberals. And he went on to develop his theology, end up writing the Church Dogmatics and so on.
What was the biggest criticism? Give us an example.
Yeah,
one
of the biggest too much influenced by the modern world. Hmm. Not enough distance and not enough criticism of the modern world. So his approach to it was to develop what he called the doctrine of God. There's one God, and that God is in judgment upon the world. That God is totally different. His language is God is wholly other, W-H, wholly other, completely other. You can't have natural theologies, he called it. You can't have philosophy that can reach God. The only way you reach God is through Christ, the revelation, and the scriptures. That's roughly the kind of criticism that he, and then he developed throughout his life. At one point late in his life, he said, I wish he never had seen this epistle to the Romans. I mean, it was so one-sided and such a thing. But he developed and influenced theology in the United States, all over the world. So that, and it was centered on the doctrine of God. God is triune. God is completely other. God is transcendent. You can only reach him through the scriptures as revealed in Jesus Christ. So that's generally where he went with his theology. Now, the context that's important for us today is his relationship with Nazi Germany. Hmm. Behind that is a stat that we might keep in mind, and that is about 80% of U.S. citizens today believe our democracy is under threat. 80%, for different reasons, you know, different partisan reasons, but that, so democracy is under threat, and 80% of Americans believe that. And the scholarly world corroborates that. So it's he lived through a time when democracy was under threat, and that becomes a way of making him relevant, I think, to our world today. Mm. So in the 1930s, Hitler was elected. It's important to remember that, elected in 1933. And in the 30s, Bart was part of what we call the Confessing Church. There were two general Christian responses. This is all simplified, but in general, there was the German Christian Church, which was aligned with Hitler or supportive of Hitler or not critical of Hitler. And there was the Confessing Church. Bart was part of the Confessing Church. Confessing Church was opposed to Hitler, and they saw the great dangers to democracy that he represented and to the Christian Church. And so Karl Barth was big part of that movement. One of the things they did, they wrote what they called the Barman Declaration, saying that that Hitler's whole effort to take over the church and make his own church, in a sense, the German Catholic Church, German Christian Church, was misguided and totally dangerous. And so they were ready to attack that and say, and he wasn't going to give in to that. He was strenuous in his saying, we must reject this, and we must reject it on the doctrine of God. God, Hitler's making an idol out of his party, out of the Nazi party. He's making a dictator himself, a messiah type. Oh, and we must fight that. And he was strenuous in trying to do that. And people influenced by him, people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, was influenced by him and opposed Hitler and was part of the plot to kill Hitler and was hung before the liberation of Germany. So this was like not fooling around. I mean, this is tough stuff.
Dangerous for
this
him.
Is really nitty-gritty, realistic stuff that Karl Barth's involved in. And then I think it was couple years after Hitler was elected, the professors of theology were required to sign an oath of loyalty to Hitler. I mean, you can see how this progresses. I mean, it's just a terrible thing, the way democracy was lost in Germany. And a total dictator took over, and step by step, including being elected. And so when Bart refused to sign the oath of allegiance to Hitler, then he was dispelled. He had to leave the country. He was from Switzerland originally. He went back to Switzerland where he did his writing and wrote the Church Dogmatics, the great treatise of the 20th century. So, yeah, that's sort of the...
Where did the name Confessing Church?
It's an interesting name. It has a history, and it went out of existence not long. It only was in effect. It was a way of trying to describe the resistance to Hitler. We're going to be confessing the Christian faith, confessing the real faith, the scriptural faith, the faith in Jesus Christ. And we're going to be resolute in doing that. So we're confessing our faith against the idolatry that Hitler represented.
The other church that was supporting Hitler, what was the spirituality behind that? Do you have a sense of what that was?
Well, Bart said it was because they were liberal. because liberals, that was because the liberals were too interested in playing ball with modernity, of interacting with cultural trends, of trying to make the Christian scriptures and Christian proclamation in tune with what was going on in the world, with movements in the world, modern movements, freedom, democracy, and so on. He thought that the German Christian church had weakened itself. I mean, this becomes, an ongoing critique. You know, for my own theology, I'm a Ronerian, as I say. I'm a follower of Karl Rahner, whose whole thing was to try to find out ways to speak about the Christian message, proclaim Christ in the modern world, in a language that people understand, in making connections with people's real experiences, and in that way, trying to reach the people as a whole. And Barth thought that's what went wrong. These people were too much into dialogue with whatever Nazism represented or whatever was going on, and failed to be critics. I mean, that's an ongoing message, you know, for us liberal theologians. What Karl Barth is standing there as a person saying, hey, make sure you know what you're doing. Don't sell out the faith. So we have people, Barth really started a movement that we call Neo-Orthodoxy, a new orthodoxy based on his church dogmatics and so on. And there are a lot of Neo-Orthodox Christians in the United States, followers of Karl Barth. And as I said, the one who would be most known would be Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who left Germany, escaped Germany, was in England, and then had the guts and courage and commitment to go back to Germany, got involved in the plot to kill Hitler, and was arrested for that, and then hung right before the liberation. So, yeah.
Did Barth still was part of the resistance, even though he was kicked out of the country?
Yes, he kept up, yeah. He was, he kept up his writing and his, as I said, he was the author of that Barman Declaration that insisted that Hitler was not going to impose a curriculum on Christian teaching. He wasn't going to impose his own views on how the message was preached in the world and so on. Yes, he kept up that. In fact, some people could, he was widely criticized in the United States for when the Soviet Union invaded Hungary, and he didn't speak out against it. And people said he wasn't consistent, you know. He was so opposed to the Nazis, but didn't find it within himself to oppose the communist dictatorship. So he was criticized for not being consistent in that effort.
Despite the lack of consistency, what does Barth's defiance of Nazism, what does that say about spirituality in general, or morality?
When we think of that as a Christian morality, I often say the cross is judge of the flag. I borrowed that from somebody, like everything else I've got, but it's a nice phrase, isn't it?
It's a great
phrase.
The
cross is judge of the flag. We pledge allegiance first of all to Christ, and then to the United States of America. My country, right or wrong, is not a Christian statement. So that the position is that as Christians, we should be judgment about what is going on in the world. We should be judges of the politics and the directions, the foreign policy of the country, and so on. And so we use Christian principles to say, so, you know, as Christians, you have to say, well, we're against war. You know, and we have to be firmly against civilian casualties in war. We can't let ourselves give in to that. We have to be a consistent voice to have war, even to be opposed to war. But if wars are fought, to be fought on grounds that try to protect civilian life.
Yeah. How did Bart's pastoral experience in Germany affect his understanding of God?
Yeah, it was really important. He was for many years a pastor, and I think he clearly felt that the liberal theology that he had learned from the greatest of the liberal theologians, that he was privileged to study under, was not good for his people. Hmm. That it was producing what we might call Christianity light, L-I-T-E. That's not his phrase, but mine.
Kind of a moral relativism?
Yes, yeah. Giving into moral relativism, yeah. And that we needed a stronger, sterner message to buttress the people. So, I mean, it's the same criticism that the American theologian Hans Urs von Balthasar, very influenced by Barth. He wrote a book about Karl Barth. Karl Barth said it was the best book that about him was ever written. And you know, praising Barth for the direction he went in. And Balthasar became a sort of Catholic Barthian. And the other person clearly influenced by Karl Barth in the Catholic world is Hans Küng, who we've talked about before. Hans Küng did his dissertation on Karl Barth and Catholic theology, and showing that Barth and the standard Catholic version of redemption and salvation were compatible. And Barth read the dissertation by Hans Küng and said, yeah, he got me right. So it sort of made Kung's reputation really in that way.
Now, didn't he criticize your mentor, Rahner?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's Balthasar who did that more clearly. I think that, I don't know that Barth and Rahner had that much direct interaction. Not that I'm aware of, which I probably would be.
I would think,
if
yes.
If there was. Not any direct dialogues that I know about. But, you know, going back to that image of God, which was behind what he said, he wanted to make it clear that all of our projections, what we say about God, is usually saying more about us than about God. Hmm. And he was very in tune with what the great Catholic theologians said, like Augustine said, if you think you know who God is, you're wrong. And Thomas Aquinas says the most important thing we know about God is that we don't know God. Aquinas said God is fundamentally incomprehensible. Hmm. So there's a spirituality connected with that, you know, of realizing the limitations of our own particular image of God. Hmm. And, you know, one of the good offshoots of that is if I recognize my limitations in how I see God, then I might be interested in talking to you about your image of God. Hmm. You know, so there's a spirituality behind that. It's a spirituality, really, in my mind, creates an openness to dialogue, because if God is totally transcendent and our images are all limited, then we could learn from one another. You know, we could find ways to enter into real dialogue.
Is the divine transcendence, is that part of the Barth?
Yeah, theology? God is transcendent. That's a word that he loved to use, yeah. He transcends, goes beyond all of our images, all of our language, all of our words about God. He's above it, beyond it. And yet, You know, it was interesting, as Bart went on and wasn't so angry at the liberals and wrote his dogmatics, he came to talk about the great yes. So he said the great no early in his life, no to liberal Christianity. But as his life went on, he said the great yes, yes to God. God is in charge of the world, but the God in charge of the world is a loving God, a compassionate God, a forgiving God, judgmental God, yes, but a God who understands human weakness, so on.
Is there, in your experience, in your research, for a theologian to convert that, not radically, but significantly, yeah, from a liberal thinking to a more conservative, is that common? I mean, I assume the theologian mature, yeah, just like everyone.
Yeah, but so not many are as radical.
Radical, okay, that's a good word.
As Karl Barth was, yeah, as such a difference. Of course, his father was a very conservative pastor, so when he was studying all this liberal theology in Germany, among the greatest liberal theologians of the day, there was some strain inside of him. This is my reading now. Of his father's voice was in there somehow, saying, "Don't get carried away with these. These people are too optimistic. These people are too much in tune to the world. These people are not as rigorous in holding on to the fundamental belief in God, the transcendence of God, the holy other, W-H, holy other, as you should be." So I think that again, my own reading, that his father's voice was big in his own changing of his outlook and so on. But then even after he dropped the bombshell on the playground of all the liberal theologians and really caused all of them to pause and rethink, he went on then to develop more clearly in his own thinking. He was a tremendous scholar. He loved Mozart. He played Mozart, and he played Mozart music while he wrote. And he had a certain humility. At one point, he said something like, after he had written all these volumes, you know, and I mean, they are tremendous stuff, great research, great tradition. He imaged himself at his death having all of his books in a wheelbarrow and taking it up to heaven and saying, here's what I did. So sort of poking fun at himself,
right,
which I think is sort of, but
if you asked Bart about Pope Francis, he'd have similar criticisms about too liberal approach to the theology.
For sure, yeah, for sure. But I go back to the thing of 80% of people are afraid of we're losing democracy, and Bart would be a great figure to think about that, you know, about where we stand today in danger, as most Americans think we are, in danger of losing our democracy. And what has to be, there has to be a confessing Christian group in the United States, people that will be ready to stand up against encroachment on democracy, willing to vote for candidates who favor democracy. I mean, there's willing to speak up in if there's any encroachment on Christian freedom to practice our religion and so on. It takes courage.
Yes.
Took courage for Bart, took courage for Dietrich Bonhoeffer more clearly.
Yes. Is there any summative things we want to put up as we close up our conversation on Bart? Is there anything we haven't
covered?
No,
I like coming back to the relevance of our own time. That's where I want to land, I think. People aren't going to read the Church Dogmatics, but...
Right.
But they can hear this podcast and say, you know, am I ready to stand up for my faith if it's challenged? Am I ready to stand up for the democracy, our experiment in self-government, our fragile experiment in self-government? Are we ready to stand up to make sure it holds, that the guardrails are there that we support that would keep someone from becoming a dictator?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Father Basic, for sharing a context for Carl Barth and how he can be impactful in our lives today.